Hey there, everybody, and welcome to So What Happens Next. I'm one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Patrick.
And this week, we are doing our special ninth episode with the ninth film by Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. None of us have seen this movie. It just came out. When would we get the chance? Kind of like when we did Hereditary, the three of us are going to go around to sort of say what we think happens in the movie, and then discuss it and whatnot. Go see it, come back, talk to you guys about what we thought, how it went, you know, warning up front at the top of the show, there's going to be spoilers. So I guess, Patrick, you want to start us off?
Yeah, this is the first movie that Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt have made together, and I think that was a big draw for a lot of other people join it, like Al Pacino, yeah. Margot Robbie, Kurt Russell, and a bunch of others. And it's about 1969 Hollywood. The golden years are about to pass the actor Rick Dalton, played by DiCaprio, and he's fading out, and his stunt double, played by Brad Pitt, is trying to push him along that says you can give it one more go. And while this is happening, Charlie Manson is revving up his Colt. And funny enough, that Rick lives right next to Sharon Tate.
So Charlie Manson, are you one of these people that's writing him letters? You on a friendly basis with good old Charlie Manson over there? All right. So how do you think the movie's going to go down? I mean, you know, we all watched the trailer right before recording today. So just to prep again, kind of like we did with Hereditary. So where do you think this movie's going to go?
Well, the trailer hops around a lot, which I like because, you know, now we can't tell the sequence of events that much.
Which, like, I really appreciate because I'm getting sick and tired of these movies coming out. It's like I saw everything in the trailer.
Yeah.
What am I doing in the theater anymore?
Well, even Netflix does that.
Don't
you watch the Netflix trailer, you watch the whole movie.
Yeah,
like
I watched one the other day, and it was just like, well, what's the point?
You can't not watch these fucking trailers.
Yeah.
The best way I found to scroll through Netflix, mute your TV. There's a life pro tip for you guys, listeners. Mute your TV. It's like none of them trailers are even happening. But yeah, so the trailer's pretty on point for not showing you what is happening in the movie.
Yeah, I think it probably starts with maybe Rick Dalton in one of his movies. And then they stop, and he's introduced to another Hollywood producer that loves the old way of movies and wants to give him one more go. But he's kind of like, I don't know what to do, fading out, but Brad Pitt's pushing him. And it just goes along that for a little bit, and then it introduces Charles Manson's Colt, or Sharon Tate in some way. And you kind of understand that, wow, this is happening right next to Rick at this time, and somehow his stunt double gets involved with him. One of the scenes, we see him in, like, an old West town where the Colt looks like they're surrounding him.
Okay. So, I guess, Amber, what do you think's going to happen in this movie?
Judging from, like, watching American Horror Story, where they did this exact piece, it's going to end with her, like, dying. And then I think a couple of other people were there, and they were also killed. A bunch of Hollywood stars. So, it's probably going to end with that. But I just don't know how these two, because I'm not familiar with these two characters, I don't know how they fit in. Because I don't remember, like, reading about that or like seeing that, so
you know the Charles.
Yeah, the Manson. Charles Manson side of it. Yeah.
Sure, he doesn't like being called Chuck, Patrick.
Might be. I don't think anyone's probably ever asked him.
Yeah.
You know?
At first, like when I was watching this, I thought it would be like a Tucker and Dale versus Evil kind of thing.
Oh my god.
Yeah, because you had those creepy like teenagers kind of like staring at them.
Has
you
everyone
know, at
in
that
this
one
room
part.
Seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Yes, I've seen it multiple times.
Have you?
No, but you've told me about it.
That might be a stay tuned because I fucking love that movie. It's stupid as shit, but it's stupid as shit.
Yep.
I think you're onto something there with the whole Charles Manson. Good old Chuck Manson plot point. I am also not as familiar with... I'm not familiar really with any of what's going on in this movie. I I will be honest, up until Patrick, you said something, I was just like, these are people who are in Hollywood. Because to me, the trailer, it comes off kind of like, these are people that Tarantino made up, and they're in the setting of Hollywood in 1969, and they're interacting with famous people. So, like, Al Pacino's character is playing a real person.
You got somebody playing Bruce Lee.
But to me, this movie looks like a live-action version of BoJack Horseman, speaking of Netflix, going on, like, in the foreground of the Charles Manson thing.
Yeah, like, as a side plot. And so you have, like, the main plot with, like, the two actors, and they're kind of, like, trying to get their mojo back, I guess. And then you have this other thing that's going on, right, and they have no clue, probably.
Which, Patrick, have you ever watched BoJack Horseman?
I watched a few episodes.
Mm-hmm. I feel, I mean, I guess that's enough to get the vibe of the show. I feel like that could easily be a season. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
This Charles Manson knockoff murder thing, we're focusing on BoJack, and in the background you have, like, this horrible thing going on, you know, like he's getting the, killing people, you know? And that, to me, is how I think this movie's gonna kind of play out, or I think that's how it's gonna feel, is, like, it's gonna be, up front, it's gonna be Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt, they're doing their thing, and then, oh yeah, he lives right next door to her and Chuck Manson, and they're, like, doing their thing. And it'd just be, like, the movie would just kind of follow them a little bit. Sort of like, I think it'd kind of do, like, a Pulp Fiction thing.
I've heard that in the reviews, that it's kind of going, harking back to Pulp Fiction.
Okay. I mean, that, because to me, that's, like, I like that. I'm just like that. That's my favorite Tarantino movie, I think, of the ones I've seen. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen, like, a good chunk. And I like that one the best, and I think that one... We got any other thoughts on how we think this movie's going to go down? I don't believe I've heard anything about werewolves being in this movie, so no. We can avoid that.
Yes, we can this time. I think one of the two will end up dying in the end, Leo or Brad.
I think it's going to be Leo.
Yeah. You don't think Brad's going to take the shot for him or whatever?
I think we're going to get an endgame situation.
Yeah.
Is you're going to be prepped for Pitt to die. You're going to be ready for it, and it's just not going to happen. And I think Tarantino's going to do a
better theatrical job of giving you that feeling that was sort of...
So you guys remember, like, in Endgame, you know, spoilers for Endgame if you haven't seen it yet. Black Widow dies, and there's no coming back from how she dies.
Yep.
When you watch these movies for so long, and you pay attention to that movie, and you know who these characters are, you kind of have that sense of, like, it's like almost a little, like, awkward, like, it's itching in the back of the brain, of, like, well, Hawkeye was the one who wanted to go, he was supposed to go.
Yeah.
It sort of only captures that to me because it's Hawkeye and it's Black Widow, not because of what they're doing so much.
Right.
I think Tarantino is going to be able to take that idea and make you feel it regardless of who's playing the character, regardless of it, like, just for with what's written, how he directs it. I think that's how it's going to go. You're going to get that feeling of, like, Brad Pitt was supposed to die because he's the stunt guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I think DiCaprio's going down.
Good point. Little tidbit I read is that Tarantino has three episodes written of whatever Western movie that Dalton starred, like, features Dalton in this movie. He has, like, three episodes that he thought about for a TV series, which I thought was interesting.
So he was doing what, like, spec scripts or something for the show?
I think so,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's actually kind of brilliant. Like, if you're going to do something like that, just write a spec script for it and then get kind of in the mentality of how it would go.
Yeah, it's like the old Westerns that Wayne starred in, he said, or what I heard he said or something along those lines.
I mean, that's fine. Those movies are so surreal to me now. Like, watching an old, like, John Wayne Western type movie, it's just, you know, they're on a set, you know, they got, like, the backdrop behind them and everything, and sometimes I'm just like, God, how far we've come with movies. I mean, we haven't quite done a classic golden age Hollywood movie yet on this show, but I think it's going to be that experience where we got to, like, take a second and go, yeah, we're not watching Endgame, we're not watching Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
I was going to say this, but, yeah, I mean, they're going to probably try to do that, so, it's so different. And I'm hoping that this movie does a good job balancing the two out, you know, like, showing you kind of, like, a behind-the-scenes look at movies like that. And I would be curious to hear about some of the research that went into this movie for them making it. Any last thoughts before we go ahead and head out and see it?
The guy who stars as Charles Manson, I'm interested to see how he acts because he was on a show called, forget it now, but he played, like, a really, really, really dumb redneck character. So I'm really interested to see how he kind of turned it around to make it into a Tarantino film.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're talking Charles Manson. He's different than, he's like the opposite of a dumb redneck character. Yeah. This guy got a bunch of people killed and tricked them all into doing it.
So. TV show was Justified, by the
Justified,
way.
Justified, yeah.
Just rang a bell right now.
That I've heard of that show plenty of times. I heard it's very good.
It was.
But yeah, you got a lot of stars in this movie. So I'm kind of curious to see how it all comes out. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and we're going to head out. We're going to go watch this movie. We're going to come back to you guys. We're going to let you know how we thought this movie was going to turn out and how it, you know, wasn't. Patrick, you got a timestamp on this movie? We were talking about
it
before.
I think it said 2 hours and 45 or 2 hours and 54 minutes. So about a 3 hour long movie once it's all said and done with previews and yada, yada,
Avatar
yada.
Avatar length.
Yeah. But I can guarantee you, well, I can give you like a 87% guarantee it's probably going to be a better movie than Avatar.
Probably is.
Yeah.
No alien
track
fucking,
record with
but...
him.
Yeah. And I'm not an Avatar fan.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think anyone is.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone is. They're either not a fan of Avatar or they're neutral on the subject. When was the last time anyone in this room ever heard someone go like, oh my God, you remember Avatar? Or... damn, I was rewatching Avatar the other day. Like, no.
I did want to rewatch Avatar, though, to see the quality of it and how it stands.
No,
that
I mean,
was
made
in 2009.
Yeah.
So.
And it was cutting edge for the time, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was.
10-year-old movie.
Yeah, that movie that everybody was talking about.
Right. And I remember seeing it in theater. I mean, like, the floating bug things were fucking awesome in 3D, but I'm not watching 3D at home. I don't give a fuck. Like,
yeah, exactly.
But all right, so we're going to go take a trip back to 1969 Hollywood. We're going to come back. We're going to let you know what we think and if any of our opinions changed or were just further reinforced. See you guys in a hot minute. And we're back after a grueling 3, maybe 7, I've kind of lost count, hours. Oh man, guys, how are we feeling after that?
Yeah, that was pretty long.
It was extremely long and unnecessarily wrong. Long, in my opinion.
wrong.
It's like a weird Freudian slip.
Yeah.
So, we just got out of, as you can hear, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Guys, I think we really need to do better on gauging how these fucking movies are going to go. I mean, we're 0-2 right now between this and Hereditary. This movie did not go really remotely any way we thought it would. Let me hear your opinions, but I think ours were a little bit more cohesive of ideas that were going. I mean, I know that I, for one, was like, it's going to be a BoJack Horseman-esque movie starring DiCaprio and Pitt, and in the background, you're going to get the Charles Manson bit, and that just didn't happen. I mean, I'm trying to think how we can approach this. I mean, it was so long. I don't want to drag all of you guys through the plot. I mean, what little there was. But I guess basically, you know, Patrick, if you had to describe the plot of this movie to our audience, what's it going to be?
A aging star is falling deeper and deeper not to making a comeback, while his pal, Stuntman, is just driving around Hollywood.
Yeah. Amber, how would you, if someone asked you on the street, what is this movie about, what would you say?
I'd basically say the same thing. With a little backstory of Charles Manson and his cult, even though they didn't even really touch on that. Like, it's not even, there's not even some historical accuracy to that. Like, I would have loved to see, like, the actual, like, what happened, which is them going up to Sharon Tate's house and basically murdering everyone there. And then maybe having Pitt and DiCaprio come in somewhere. Like, some type of showdown, but there was which we got a little bit of that at the end, but it was...
Well, we got a lot of showdown at the end of that movie.
Yeah, for
sure.
Like, 5 minutes, you know? Like, it was slow. Oh, this crazy shit is happening. Whoa! And then it's like, just kind of ends there.
Yeah. I think I would... Like, if someone asked me, I would say kind of a cross between the two is, like, it is a fantasy of classic Hollywood centered around Leonardo DiCaprio's character, who's this, like, waning star. His buddy's Brad Pitt, who's his stuntman, who's sort of, like, also waning in his career, is kind of already gone. And then you have the, almost like the setting is the Charles Manson thing. And the only reason any, like, Sharon Tate and any of them are involved is to be setting, yeah. not actual characters. Mm-hmm. They're not really in the movie.
Yeah.
Like Margot Robbie's character, she's not in it.
No.
She's there. And I mean, she sits in a movie theater all day. And that's the most I think we see her.
Yeah. Like they didn't build on the characters at all, except for maybe like DiCaprio.
Right.
Because we saw him, you know, like his glory days and then to now where it's like he's still a good actor. It's just he's not getting the part. Like he keeps playing the same character over and over again.
Yeah, the heavy, the villain. Yeah. Instead of he was always the good guy for a while. Now he's playing the criminal and it's just getting typecast over and over again.
Yeah.
Except for the Lancer, I believe the show was, that he was the one he did the villain in. It looked like he would maybe part of that for the season.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this goes to Patrick's point from the top of the show, is like, it is about the old Hollywood sort of becoming the new Hollywood. And I mean, back then, you were typecasted. I mean, you think of certain actors doing certain parts that you don't normally see them do in these classic movies, and you're just like, wait a minute, no, that it feels wrong. And it's just sort of, that's what they're trying to show with DiCaprio. And I mean, like, to Amber's point, he's great. He's doing great in this movie. I mean, there's this whole evil Hamlet sequence. And I mean, I was like, oh man, like the little girl comes up to him after and says, that was the best acting I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, yeah, you're only like 8, so there's not a whole lot of acting you've probably seen. But like, he did genuinely do a really good job. Like, I was like, wow, that, unfortunately, is the movie I want to see right now, is this Western with DiCaprio as the villain.
Yep.
And, you know, the rest of... And there was such a large chunks of this movie devoted to showing me other movies. Like, showing me DiCaprio as Steve McQueen's character in The Great Escape. Or showing me DiCaprio's character as this Western villain in that other show where he's throwing the girl around with the Dark Hamlet thing.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like, I kind of would rather watch a lot of those. And I mean, I don't need to see Brad Pitt driving a car for an hour. I felt like there was at least an hour total him alone in DiCaprio's car just driving.
Yeah,
I think Tarantino really wanted to show what old Hollywood used to be, and that's what he used it for. But honestly, it was totally unnecessary to have. Probably he could probably been 15 minutes max.
Yeah, I don't like the sequence with all the lights turning on the street, like, you have like a Taco Bell light turns on and then some Hollywood landmark signs turn on.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's really nice. All of this movie is really nice scenes, but it feels like none of the executive producers actually said, oh no, Quentin, don't do that. Like, we need to cut this. I'm sorry. You know, you can make an extended cut on the Blu-ray, but for this, we got to keep people entertained. And we're spending hours watching scenery.
Yep.
And I mean, like, showing me old Hollywood, it's great. It worked really well to show me this, like, they did a really good job with all the murals in the background with like Charlie Chaplin and shit. And it's like, hey, this is the old Hollywood and the new Hollywood is occurring in front of that. So you have like the hippies and you have all the new clubs and whatnot. And like, yeah, it's doing a really good job, but I got that in the first one. I don't need to see it 6 more times.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, Patrick, to what you said, well, we were talking about it in the car on the way home, I think, right? Was there are some movies that do a good homage to a genre.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, of Tarantino's movies, I kind of like Kill Bill. That's not a sentiment that's shared in the whole room, but I like them. They're over the top and they're kooky, but it's an over the top kooky version of a genre of movies. These like samurai kung fu movies. This
one was very like watered down.
This was like a jerk off. It was just like them jerking off to old Hollywood the whole time. It was like, look how great everything was. It was so amazing in 1969, and it's just like...
Yeah, and I don't know if that's trying to be, like, the actors that we have now suck, or, like, the directors that we have now, like, their movies suck. So I don't really... Yeah. But that's kind of, like, what I was getting from it, because you had, like, DiCaprio, like, really getting into it, and then you had these, like, directors that wanted, like, things done in a specific way, and that's just how things were. Whereas now it's just like, oh, like actors are having more say about the way they're like treated and things like that on stage,
which is probably good. I mean,
so,
I think the major issue is the movie has this infinite amount of ironic layers you could peel back. So at first glance, whether you like it or not, to me it comes off like a jerk off of the 1960s and like movies back then, old school movies, and saying the old school movies from the 50s and the early 60s are better than the stuff that came out in the 70s and stuff that's coming out now. But then peel that layer away and it's an irony, is we're ironically telling you this story because at the end of the movie, so, you know, as we said at the top, spoilers for this film, but arguably the best part of this movie comes at the end. What Amber said earlier is historically accurate. Charles Manson's goons and him or whatever go to Sharon Tate's house and they kill people. In this movie, they go to DiCaprio's house next door. It's not Charles Manson, it's just a bunch of goons. They go to his house to kill him. Instead, they run into Brad Pitt, who has this the best, I think, actor in the movie, Brandy the dog. the John Wick of dogs, if you will, where Brad Pitt and his dog kick these guys' asses. Yeah. I mean, and then it becomes this over-the-top gore fest, and he's fucking them up. And I mean, at the end, DiCaprio kills one with a flamethrower, and I'm like, at this point, I'm all in. Oh, hell yeah, that's what I'm waiting for after fucking 3 hours.
And at that point, I was like, I wish the rest of the film was like this.
Well, Patrick and I said this,
Because then they started, like, you know, okay, like, this happened at 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, oh, they're coming up the hill, like, they're, you know, and it's like, okay, we're actually getting somewhere.
Yeah.
But you did this after 6 months later.
And then that's when the narrator, Kurt Russell, kind of amped up his narrating of the film, was at that point because it kind of, I guess, gave a better background for those who know some of the history of the murders.
Right. And it felt like, I mean, the Kurt Russell narration made me feel like I was watching three different parts of three different movies about the same thing. So I think, Patrick, you mentioned at the top of the show that there is like a this is implied to be sort of like a back to Pulp Fiction kind of sequencing. I didn't get that at all.
No, and I mean, that's what I read in some reviews, and it doesn't, that there is none of that whatsoever.
No.
In my opinion,
I can see it trying, but the thing I think that worked with Pulp Fiction was it was what, 5-6 different stories involving people who are interconnected, but they're complete, like, you can watch Bruce Willis's section and you could end it there and that's your movie. There, you don't have to watch what's going on with Travolta. You don't have to watch what's going on with Sam Jackson. You don't need to know any of that. You can watch Bruce Willis's bit of Pulp Fiction, that like 15, 30 minutes that is, and you could turn it off and you're like, I saw an entire story, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You watch the rest of it, you get maybe a little bit more of the background of what's going on, but it doesn't do anything. This movie felt like I was watching three parts of the same script by like three different people. And it was like, in one version you have Kurt Russell narrating it, which I liked. I liked the Kurt Russell narration. I liked how he was in the movie and also narrating it as kind of this like nothing character who's just there. And then you have the other version where it's trying to stage the world around Margot Robbie's character, and but you're focused on Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
And then you have the DiCaprio movie. And it's just kind of like, if we dropped the whole Charles Manson thing, one, could easily shave an hour and a half off this movie.
Yeah.
Two, I think you would have had a more cohesive and better movie. Because it just felt so chunked. But you're still talking about the same people.
Yeah.
On a different note, what did we like about this movie?
I like Brad Pitt's character, Cliff. I wish there would have been a little more behind the history of him, because there is a scene where it looks like he's about to kill his wife when they're on a boat, and he's accused of killing his wife by other people. And then DiCaprio mentions in one scene that he was a war hero, which I could definitely see, because it was, he started right into Hollywood right after World War II, it sounded like. And going back to Tarantino-esque films, there was a scene where they're at the ranch that used to film Old West movies, and he's surrounded by hippies, and I'm expecting like the hippies to start attacking him and expecting some sort of kung fu or whatever Brad Pitt can do to get out of the situation and beat the crap out of him. No, he just chooses one hippie to beat the crap out of. It was a little disappointing in that scene. And the whole Bruce Dern checking on George, I think his name was in the movie.
Yeah.
Checking on him was kind of like useless.
Well, it just went on.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of these things where it just kept going. We get it. He has Alzheimer's or something. He's kind of losing it. He doesn't know who anybody is. You can give me the whole, who are you? Have him repeat it twice. We're done. Move on. Instead, he's just like, yeah, Dakota Fanning implied is having sex with me or something like that, so I'm cool with these hippies here. Oh, by the way, who are you again? Why are you here again?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shut up. We get it. Like, let's move on. I think him beating the shit out of that one hippie who slashed his tires wasn't bad. I mean, I was kind of like game about this, because I'm like, haha, like, I would also want to do this to someone who slashed my fucking tires.
Yeah.
But I was also expecting, like, a horde of them just to come out and, like,
I genuinely I genuinely thought he was gonna die. I thought that scene,
because they were following him while he was like entering the house.
And it was just like, it was there. Everyone's creepy. Everyone's skulking around him. I'm like, he's surrounded. We've shown that he can do his job. That he can fight, but I don't think he's coming out of this. Instead, it just nothing happened.
Yeah, he just sort of like waltzes out of there.
And we were talking about this. One of the plethora of trailers at the beginning of this was Knives Out by Rian Johnson, who is perhaps infamous in many circles for subverting expectations. And this movie did that with scenes like this, and I didn't really need it.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to put it in there, you got to add something to it. It's just...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying like you should make me right, but I mean, like, it's Tarantino. All the movies that you watch, as far as I can think of all the ones I've seen, you know what's happening. And that's sort of the point. I don't find it stale. I find it fulfilling. Don't be super predictable, but when something happens, like someone gets shot and they die, you can at least a few minutes before it occurs see it coming. And that, to me, is like, that's fulfilling. You make your audience happy that they got it right. They enjoy your movie more. When I sit through these fucking cult of hippie women and like two dudes standing around getting ready to fucking kill Brad Pitt, and then it doesn't happen, they just yell at him. I'm like, I guess you're matching hippies and all, but I'm just like, what was the point of any of this?
Exactly. Was it to give a shout out to Bruce Dern so he would have a role in the movie? I don't know.
Well, there was a good few of those in this. I mean, Luke Perry, we talked about before we got back and everything, and it was just like, he's in the movie for 5 minutes and he doesn't really do much.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't do much.
Yeah. I mean, Brad Pitt and DiCaprio are the only ones doing anything in this movie. Everyone else is just sort of, again, setting.
Yep.
And this was something I didn't say until we started recording. I was thinking of it maybe halfway through the movie and then kind of forgot until now. It felt kind of like you got a lot of modern-day actors and actresses who really love old-school Hollywood. Or at least, like, 60s Hollywood. And said, hey, I'm Quentin Tarantino. Of course, you know, yes, that Quentin Tarantino. I'm making a movie about old school Hollywood. Do you want to be in it? And do you want to play this famous person from that time period? And in my mind, I see these people jumping on it. They're just like, oh, fuck, of course I'm going to play Sharon Tate. Of course I'm going to do that. That's amazing. Yeah, I'll play this person. They're my idol, whatever, you know. And that's cool. I mean, that's always fun. But when you're doing it for 5 minutes to do nothing, and you're really doing more by your name being attached to this movie and not actually doing anything to the movie, I'm just kind of whatever.
Like the whole Playboy Mansion scene.
Yeah, that whole thing was like you have someone playing Steve McQueen, and it's just like he doesn't...
Yeah.
He tells you the dynamic of Margot Robbie's character and Roman Polanski and that other guy, and it amounts to nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't...
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Because 6 months later, that guy isn't even there.
Yeah.
I mean, she goes back to the other one, I guess.
No, Roman's
overseas.
He's
in Europe.
Yeah, directing the movie at the time.
That's what they said in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were like, oh, while Roman was in Europe, she had her friends over or something.
Yeah.
Which the whole time I'm like, this is implied everybody's fucking each other in this house. Like, that's just what this seems to be going towards.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole Playboy Mansion scene, again, it's just like these things showing the grandeur of Hollywood and they don't...
And we see them driving to and from places like a couple of times.
Yeah,
like
we see them driving a lot.
Yeah. In the same car, like same getup and...
Yeah, I just felt like it was showing this grandeur of Hollywood that amounted to nothing, and it was just, again, we're jerking off to the idea of 60s Hollywood. Sure, it's cool, but I don't need it this much.
Yeah. I mean,
and then
even
her sleeping. Like, I was just
actually a good point. I forgot about that because it happened so early in the movie.
It was maybe, like, a few minutes or whatever, and she was, like, in the bed, like, snoring. And I was just like, was this, like, a Quentin Tarantino, like...
Well, that was something I thought, too, was the whole... I was just like, oh, she's snoring. We're showing her being a real person, not an actress. And then that never came about again. Everybody was everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, Patrick, what were you going to say?
I mean, if you're going to film at Playboy Mansion, at least show Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked by that.
Yeah.
Like, or someone, I guess, in today, parading around as Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing the Playboy Bunny thing. You have people walking. I'm like, this is 60s. We're talking, like, peak Hefner right now.
And you named... Name people, and like Steve McQueen came up as Steve McQueen, You know, if you're going to do that for everyone else that maybe
this is what I'm talking about. It's three separate movies based on the same script. The whole first part of this movie, we're tagging locations, we're tagging people, which I found really fucking helpful because I would have never been like, that's Steve McQueen. Like,
yeah,
they're just like, this is Steve McQueen. This is the Playboy Mansion. I'm like, okay, cool. Yep. I mean, maybe when the bunnies walked into frame, I would have been like, okay, yeah, this is Playboy, obviously. But until that scene, I would have never had any idea that's where they are. And the worst part is the middle version of this script is the worst version, and it takes the most time.
Yeah.
The 6 months later forward, I'm about it. The day one stuff, I'm about it. And it's just like, what are we doing? Why are we like Amber, like you said, why are we telling me the date and time if it's not going to do anything? And we don't do anything with that. They're like, it's February 9th. It's February 10th. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, it's 6 months later. I'm just, well, wait a minute. Why did we do the first 3 days? Who gives a shit? It just is. I mean, we were talking before the show, or before we started recording again, I guess on our way home, I guess I should say. 8 out of 9 isn't bad. As far as good movies to not so good movies. Yeah. I mean, someone's got to fuck up sometime. Even Tarantino's got to screw up sometime. Everybody,
yeah,
every
but I don't
director
believe
does
he thinks he does.
No, I think a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
And I mean that.
I want to say one more thing. I think he made up too much of what was going on in Hollywood at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the Bruce Lee Cliff fight. Bruce Lee, he would have been confident that he could beat Cassius Clay, but he would never been like, I would have made him a cripple. I've seen a lot of Bruce Lee movies, read a lot of biographies, you know, that he wrote, autobiography, all that. He wasn't that type of person. I think they kind of just made him wrong, and I think kind of shames him.
Yeah. No, so there's a, for those of you who are listening to this and haven't seen the movie yet, there is a sequence which ends up being a fucking dream that Brad Pitt has of him hanging out with the other stunt guys waiting to get called onto the set, and Bruce Lee's sort of like proselytizing his mantras and shit, and he's just talking about how he adores Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, for like actually fighting somebody as opposed to these other fights where it's just like, I'm fighting you, but it's always safe. Like, I'm not out to kill you.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no, the whole point of fighting is to kill someone. You got to fight like it's your last fight and blah, blah, blah. And it's just this ostentatious bullshit. And clearly he's getting his get up for Kato for the Green Hornet. And Brad Pitt laughs at him and they fight. And Brad Pitt's fighting him off. And it's just, it's like what Patrick said. It's just, it's like, I don't feel like Bruce Lee would have done this.
Yeah.
He's not getting all pissed at a stunt guy and being just like, oh, you know what? Let's fight right fucking now. I'm going to make up some rules so we can fight and do this. It's just like, why are we fucking around with this?
Yeah.
And it's making up crap that wouldn't have happened. That, like Patrick said, kind of does a dishonor to someone, to a great actor's memory. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of shameful. It's sort of lame.
When he was younger, when he first came to America, I could definitely see that. But when he got into Hollywood, he was much older, much wiser, much more mature at that point. And it was kind of like, you know what, Tarantino, you blew the movie for me at that point.
Well, what ruined the movie for that point was that it was a dream.
No, it was flashback.
No, it was dreaming.
No, it was a dream.
Because he's
sitting on the
roof, and he's thinking, what if I just go?
Yeah, and convince them.
Yeah, and this is the problem the movie had.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Very good point. Yeah.
This is the problem it had, is it's really tough to tell, okay, what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
And again, this movie's like an onion. Peel that layer back. That's the point.
Yeah.
The point is that you can't tell what's real and what's fake. And it just drives me insane because it comes off like this stupid pseudo-intellectual bullshit. Is it's like, oh, what if I went down there right now? Oh, I'd run into Bruce Lee. Oh, we fight. Oh, I kick his ass.
No, because he was on the Western one. That's what he was trying to get a stunt double for. And he said, no, you can't because this guy is Randy's friend or cousin and he knows the story.
Yeah, but then he left.
And then he was thinking about why he fucked over Randy.
Him fantasizing about it.
No, because that was for the first one where he asked about it was for the Western. And then DiCaprio's character was for Green Hornet.
Oh!
You understand what I'm trying to say?
I get it now. So they were all... I genuinely
plus, he was wearing different clothes, too.
Yeah. I thought
okay,
it was...
Gotcha.
They were all... I didn't think they were all doing the same thing. I thought it was like, we're all on the back lots. We're just hanging out waiting.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to be that Bruce Lee's doing Green Hornet. We're doing this
other... Yeah, but even if his outfit wasn't for the same set... So, I think,
DiCaprio was in the trailer wearing a tux.
Yeah.
Then after that, he says, Randy, go put on a tux because he's going to be part of it. So, they're all just sitting there and he's staying there, but it's a flashback because at the beginning he's asking, can I get on the set? And it's for the Western.
Yeah, it's for the Western. So he would have been wearing, okay.
That chopping of it, though, made me sit there and fucking think it was the same movie.
Yeah.
And that there just happened to be where the Green Hornet is also filming. Which I kind of liked that of like, oh, look at all these people from different whatevers that are going on today. They're all just hanging out. And I was like, that's kind of neat. But you know what, Patrick, you're totally right. Yeah. Which that makes it worse because I don't feel like some rando stunt double played by Brad Pitt, who's been doing only Westerns, could substantially fight off Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. I mean, maybe if Brad Pitt was like a really eclectic dude, he's doing a bunch of different stunts, but he's been doing the same thing for like a decade.
Exactly.
And that's just riding horses, shooting guns. So we obviously have some opinions on this movie. I mean, perhaps one of our more divisive movies where it's like, dislike, but it's not like Hereditary where we're sitting here like every inch of it we don't like. However, though this movie is relatively new, there are some reviews for it, and a good bit of reviews, too. It looks like there's almost 3,000 reviews total on Rotten Tomatoes. Take these reviews as you will. It's Rotten Tomatoes. Critics score it. It has a fresh rating of 85%. Audience score it has a 77%, at least for right now. Obviously, this movie's only been out for maybe a week. No, it just came out this...
3 days.
When we're recording this, it's been out for 3 days.
Yeah.
When you guys hear it, it'll be out for a week. So I'm sure this is subject to change. There's a good smattering of reviews, obviously. There are good ones, bad ones. One of the good ones from Brian Lowry from CNN.com. So I'll read some of these, see how they are. For those well-versed in writer-director's work, it's a credible and intriguing addition to his filmography. Yet, at 2 hours and 41 minutes, it also feels too leisurely in connecting its threads. I can totally get on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more of a positive spin than I would put on it, but I think that that timestamp nails it. It's too long, and you start... I mean, even in our discussions now, I'm forgetting shit that happened in the beginning of this movie that they never fucking resolved.
Yeah.
Let's see. One of the bad critic reviews is a 2 out of 4, which I guess some people can give it that, some people can't, whatever, from Ben Sachs from the Chicago Reader. Though Tarantino mixes fiction and historical fact cleverly and confidently, I'm not sure what he wanted to achieve with the mix this time. And I'm not sure if he knew either. And that, again, also kind of nails my opinion. It's like, we are mixing them both. I don't know what it amounted to.
I feel like he didn't even want to add that historical content to it.
I agree.
Yeah,
was like, oh, you have to add this because it'll make it more, I guess, entertaining. Like, it was an afterthought. Like, that's what
you know, I feel like that you hit the nail on the head with that. Is it feels like you wanted to make the solely DiCaprio Brad Pitt movie, and somewhere along the line, someone said, well, if you're going to do it in 1969, you know what happened then? And it became make him live right next door to Sharon Tate. And it's just because, like I said, she's just there to set up this movie. We have this whole, in the movie, there's this whole sequence where she goes and she sees a Sharon Tate movie, The Wrecking Crew. And it's sort of, again, implied you really don't know that she watches every screening of it the whole day. And there's, like, subtle hints to where, like, she leaves the theater at night. She got there when there's, like, a matinee sign up, so evidently she got there early. And she's just enjoying watching this movie and listening to people laugh at her doing whatever, which, like, okay, you know, that's kind of cool. Low-key, go see your movie, see what people think. Why am I spending an hour seeing it? Well, maybe not an hour, but I'm spending, like, a good 20 minutes going back to her watching this. And something I almost forgot to fucking mention is right when you think you're safe, out come them Tarantino feet. So many feet in this fucking movie. All these ladies' nasty, dirty feet just sitting on chairs.
Yeah, that was in Kill Bill, too.
Oh, it's in every single one of them.
She's, like, barefoot in a lot of the shots.
Yeah, because Tarantino's got that foot fetish. And, I mean, this was, like, dial it to 11, man. We're taking toes and pressing them against glass. It's fucking disgusting. If someone did that in my car, I'd be pissed as shit.
Yep.
Like, and Brad Pitt looks at her like, what the fuck are you doing? But doesn't do anything about it. And I'm like, dude, Brad Pitt, you need to be like, get your fucking feet off that glass. One, this isn't my car. And two, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Because there is clear dirt on everybody's feet in this movie. I get it. People's feet get dirty. I'm sure my feet don't look like fucking, you know, amazing pieces of art either. But I don't need to see everybody's fucking feet. When Sharon Tate puts her feet on that, or bare fucking feet, on that theater chair in front of her,
I almost lost it. Yeah.
Because people do that, and it is disgusting. So people don't Don't take your fucking shoes off in a movie theater. You don't need to touch what's on that floor, whether you're wearing socks or not. It's fucking gross. Keep your goddamn shoes on and keep your goddamn feet off the seats in front of you, especially if someone's sitting there, because that's just fucking, that's asshole move. They make these little recliner seats for a fucking reason. You don't need to do that. Anyway, here's some audience reviews. I'll go to a real bad one. Gave it, apparently you can do this, half a star. From Ryan E. Yep, Quentin Tarantino sure did it again. I will officially never see any other quit in Tarantino movie. Looks like autocorrect kind of took this review for a spin. I will never see any other quit in Tarantino movie for the rest of my life. I walked out of the movie. It was complete garbage. Saw Lion King instead. Leonardo DiCaprio, I am so ashamed. DiCaprio did not read your review, I guarantee it. It was also posted 5 minutes ago. He might have been in the same theater as us.
Wow. Shit. That's crazy.
Also, he just said that he fucking didn't pay for a movie that he went into. He just walked out and walked into another movie. Dude, you gotta pay for that.
Well, he technically paid for a movie. He paid it just wasn't
for Hollywood.
That movie.
Yeah, no. He didn't pay for Lion King. I mean,
he just went from one, I don't understand.
He walked out.
He went from one bad movie, well, not, it's not even that bad. It one
movie, a movie he didn't like.
Yeah, a movie he didn't like, to a movie that is horrible. Like,
well, I don't know. I haven't seen Lion King. I'm not going to judge it.
It's made plenty of money, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Aladdin, like at worst,
yeah,
or at best, you're doing the same movie again. At worst, it's still like enough of the movie to call it Lion King. I mean, unless you have just an awful thing going on.
Yeah,
I mean,
and you might not have to see another Quentin Tarantino movie. This might be his last one.
I think he's supposed to do 10.
He's supposed to do 10. That's what
he says.
He's
got one more in him.
He's got one more to do.
One
Which is
more
bullshit.
In him.
He's going to do a bunch.
I've got one more in me.
He's just shitting them out every so many years. Yeah, also, you walk out of a movie you started watching, and you walk into another movie assumedly already in progress. I know it's Lion King. I know we kind of pieced together what happened in the beginning. But, I mean, that circle of life sequence is, like, one of the biggest parts of that movie. You missed it. You're walking halfway into the middle of the Lion King.
He said that, but we don't know when he walked in, yada, 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 you know, blah, blah, blah.
I would hope that he, best case scenario,
went back up, bought a ticket.
Went to the next movie.
Yeah.
I got a feeling that Ryan E., though, just kind of walked out, saw Lion King was playing down the hall, felt, I deserve my money back or to go see whatever I fucking want, and walked in Lion King.
Yeah,
I don't know. Either way, I don't think Leonardo DiCaprio gives a shit about your review. Another review, also 5 minutes ago from Anonymous, 4.5 stars. Was it too long? No. I didn't feel like it. I actually sat at the end and wanted more. Oof.
You must have no life.
Dude. I think that the characters were well-crafted, damn likable, and I wanted to see more of them. Here we go. As someone who lived through the 60s, I liked the end of this film better the reality.
Duh.
Because it's a fantasy. It's a nice, happy
and
ending.
And everybody lives.
Yeah.
Oh,
with the exception of Pitt going to the hospital, but
he's still alive.
Yeah, he's
alive. And then the last line of this is, oh, and great soundtrack too. Good songs I long forgot. Good songs I long forgot, I think is what he meant. I'm trying to sound whatever. Yeah, I mean, no, it was too long. I got out of there, I think, right after it said written, directed by Quentin Tarantino. I said to everybody here, you guys ready? I gotta go to the bathroom. There's no stinger here. Let's get out. Like, there's nothing to do. Of course it's better than reality. Everyone fucking died in the reality. Like, that's a really shit ending to that.
Yeah.
This one, you see DiCaprio get his life back together, and he has a new start on stuff. He's got his, like, his wife.
I mean, it would have been much to see, like, you know, those two pregnant ladies being gutted and everything.
Oh, I was like, kind of like, oh yeah, this is how it's going to go down.
Yeah.
This is going to get dark.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, it's one thing for Tarantino to be all gory and shit. It's not always dark. It's just gory.
Yeah.
That would have been like, oof.
Like sick.
Yeah, like that would have made you feel uncomfortable. It would have made you feel sick to watch. And then once that flamethrower came in the screen, I was like, yeah, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing something different. And yeah, of course it was a better ending, but it was also like, I didn't need it. You could have ended it with Brad Pitt going to the hospital. And that would have been fine. Roll credits on him walking back or whatever to his bedroom, laying down next to his wife. I didn't really need the Sharon Tate going,
yeah,
hey,
like,
you want to...
let's get to know our neighbors. Like, why?
Yeah, who cares? Once again, in the true So What Happens fashion. If we can make a better ending to this movie, or if we can tweak this movie. I think we'll change it a little bit since we had some trouble in some past episodes. If we could tweak this movie however we wanted to make it better, while keeping the same general plot, what would we do?
I would definitely take out Charles Manson. Like, the parts with Leonardo DiCaprio were fine, I think. I think they should have expanded more on Brad Pitt's character, and maybe, like, everyone thinks that he killed his wife, but then, like, it flashes back to actually, like, what happened, and it, like, could have been, like, a freak accident or something. Like, she's yelling at him and stuff, and then she, like, falls over or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that would have been, and he's just trying to, like, no, I didn't, like, kill my wife, like, this is really, you know, and something to where, like, they basically get back up. DiCaprio has that whole thing with the girl, you know, talking about that book he's reading or whatever, and, like, how that guy, he's not good anymore, he's actually, like, pretty bad,
mm-hmm.
and, like, he's, you know, kind of, you know, just going downhill, and then maybe, like, he finishes the book or something, and actually the guy, like, gets back up. So following that kind of, I don't know, storyline.
Yeah, because you never do hear how the book ends.
Yeah.
And I guess that, again, peel back that layer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the point. So your ending scene in this movie would be, what would the end of your movie be? Like, instead of, I guess, the fight sequence in the pool and everything, like, what would the end of your movie be?
I think it would be with them starring in some movie. A movie that they actually probably weren't a part of, like, in the 60s, but
like
just
that.
Find, like, a one that did really well,
mm-hmm.
and just, like, put them in there. And that's kind of,
like,
the start of their new career, and,
mm-hmm.
like, everyone's happy.
Okay.
So.
No, I was, with what you laid down, I was thinking the same thing, like, take a movie from 1971, put them in it, that's their, like, return to grace. Patrick, what do you got? If you were to retweak this movie, and what would your final scene?
It's kind of tough because we've talked about like three different storylines going on.
Yeah.
I think setting the scene that Sharon Tate does live next door would have been fine. Just maybe one or two scenes that, oh, that's Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate. Like the drive up, he recognizes them. Maybe that would have been fine by me. And more about just Rick trying to capture that lost acting career. And Cliff just hanging by the side, you know, maybe more of his daily duties for what he does for Rick, or being a stunt double, something like that. And then just following them around, and then their comeuppance, like you guys have said, in some 70 film, they restart. Or even the end scene to me is Rick finally gets the guts to go to Polanski and introduce himself, and that's the night. You just see a van or something come up, and you hear screams, and that's how it ends, something like that.
Yeah, okay. I think... if I were to do it and overhaul this movie and change the ending, speaking of three sort of movies happening, I would pick the one with the narration, for sure, and I would have Kurt Russell kind of narrating this movie. I would make it about Pitt and about DiCaprio, and it sounded like they were trying to do this in the movie. I don't know if anyone was also feeling this way, but it hit me like we're looking at DiCaprio's quote-unquote fall from grace and how much it sucks to be an actor mm-hmm. who just isn't the best anymore. While at the same time watching Brad Pitt, whose life kind of already sucks anyway, also continuously fall. Because all he has left now is DiCaprio's career. I'd want to watch that tandem decline a little bit more in depth on each of those characters and kind of frame it in a way where I'm comparing them. You know, like, so you have DiCaprio maybe bitching about that he can't drive anymore. And you do this a little bit, but it only does it once, and it doesn't even seem like it's a big deal, is you have DiCaprio can't drive anymore. Well, yeah, Pitt can, but he drives a piece of shit.
Yeah, and he lives in a trailer.
And they do these things, and I want more of that.
Yeah, because they did that in the beginning, but then they kind of just...
And they drop it.
Yep, drop it.
And I think I would still do the Sharon Tate thing, kind of like what Patrick was saying. I would dial it back akin to what you were doing. And then to kind of mix the two, Charles Manson's dudes go to Sharon Tate's house. There's no intervening on DiCaprio's part. They hear the screams, and it sort of would be like Brad Pitt's out walking his dog, tripping acid. DiCaprio's at home. They hear the screams from up the hill, and they're like, what the fuck? They, in two different places, they rush up there, and you got, you know, the killers are trying to kill everybody or whatever. Maybe they took out one of the no-named guests, and then that is your over-the-top fight scene. You got Pitt with his dog. You got DiCaprio with his flamethrower. They're both drunk and on drugs. They save the day, like they do in this movie, and then maybe have Roman Polanski come home. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head what he directs after Rosemary's Baby, but he could just be... He comes home, he's like, oh my God, like, not only did you save my wife and our unborn child, but you're also this famous actor. Do you want to be in this movie of mine? And then that's their comeback and everything's cool. And then you can do the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood little thing. And, you know, everyone's done and happy and it's over. And it's not like reality at all. And that's the, again, peel back that layer, donkey. It's the point. So last but not least... What's everyone rating this movie? Our standard 10. Amber, what do you got?
I would give it probably a 7 out of 10. Like, I could watch it again, but it wouldn't be, like, the first thing I'd pick out.
Yeah.
Especially from him. So, but it wasn't, like, it was just long. I think the problem was it was long, and they had three different storylines going on. If they had just picked, like, one or two, I think it would have been fine.
Yeah, I think it was long, and it didn't use its time well. And I think that's how I'd summarize it. Patrick, what do you got out of our standard 10?
It's a little higher than Hereditary. I forget what I gave for Hereditary, but
I think you gave Hereditary like a 2.
Yeah.
All
right,
I'm going to go about 3.8.
Oh,
okay. Dang,
I thought it was way too long. Storyline was just a waste. The plot was a waste. The only thing that kind of raised it up above Hereditary was the acting by DiCaprio and Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was just dumb. It was really disappointing for me. I like Tarantino films. I mean, my favorite is Reservoir Dogs, but...
It's a good one.
It was just really, really disappointing, and there were so many different plot issues, and I mean, he could have went one way instead of going, you know, again, I'm just a no-name, and he's a director, so he gets paid the big bucks, so, but yeah, I'm not a fan, and unlike Amber, I don't think I could sit through this one again.
Yeah, so I guess my rating, I might just give it like a an even 4, maybe 4.5. I didn't, and this is the problem with it, and this is, again, this really stupid meta reason for not liking it, is I want... It's so long, it doesn't use its time well. And like some of those reviews on Rotten Tomatoes said, it doesn't feel quite like Tarantino knew what he wanted out of this movie. And I think the only reason it hits so hard that way is because other movies like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction's a great example of it because it does it all chopped up in such a way. Those movies are so... Everything leads to one thing. And you might not notice in the beginning... You might not even notice it on that first watch, but when you watch it again, you're like, oh my God, this makes so much... There's like, this is something I didn't see before. This movie, not only do I not really want to sit through it again just because it's so fucking long and it'd be tough, it's also that it doesn't go anywhere. I mean, you get the Charles Manson that's like buried under everything. That leads to something... But DiCaprio's career sort of left kind of in the air at the end. Like, he mentions at the beginning of the movie, oh man, it'd be great to, like, be who knows if I'll be in his next picture or whatever. And it's like, yeah, cool. You're going to go meet literally everyone but Roman Polanski. That doesn't guarantee you're in the movie. That just guarantees that you finally met your neighbors. Neat. I mean, I've met my neighbors. It hasn't amounted to anything. I think I borrowed a can opener from one of them once, and that was about the peak of that relationship. But that's the point, is it just it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything, and you have all these threads that are just thrown out, like the hippie commune cult thing that doesn't really... The end of the day, you get three of them, and Brad Pitt even says, I remember your hair. The only other time we're talking about this woman has red hair, the only time we're talking about someone with red hair is when you see Dakota Fanning's character, and those are not the same person.
Right.
And it's just like, why not have Dakota Fanning in there who gets fucked up? I mean, or just not have her be... It just... Like Patrick said, there's lots of plot issues. I'd give it a 4. I think I'll rate it at a 4. There are much better Tarantino movies. There's better movies that Tarantino is in that he didn't direct. Yeah. And I mean, this is just kind of a... It's a bit of a dud. I think if he thought it through more, we might have something. I think if producers and editors maybe took some extra steps with it and cut out some of these driving scenes and stuff, we'd have a better movie. It just needs to be tighter, and it's not. In fact... A lot of movies could be fucking shorter, and they need to start getting shorter. Because I'm getting really sick and tired of sitting through like 3 hours of a movie. If I get to start going, man, is this a good time to go to the bathroom for the second time because this movie is like 3 fucking hours long? Your movie is too long. You gotta tighten that shit up, man. If there's one thing I liked about Surf Ninjas, 85 minutes.
Yep.
85 minutes, we're off to the races in the beginning, we're done, you know, a little over an hour later, cool. This movie, I'm like, I feel like it ended a bunch of times.
We started this week with a little new feature we're going to start doing. It's going to be local Chicago beers. And we're not talking the big ones like Revolution or Goose Island. We want the smaller ones to give them, you know,
the attention they deserve.
Attention. Yeah, perfect. And so this week we are featuring the brewery of Cruz Blanca and their Palm Shade Tropical Pale Ale. So it's supposed to have hints of fruit and tropical fruit. It really does not, but we're trying to match the beer with the movie, so this is, you know, give that Hollywood, California feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for those that don't know, Cruz Blanca is part of the Rick Bayless chain, and he's a famous chef that, Chicago native that brings about a lot of Mexican and Latin American flavors.
The restaurant's very good.
Very good restaurants. So this is something we're going to be doing. If you guys have any suggestions of beers we should try, please comment on them, blog on them, tweet us.
Yeah, tweet us.
Instagram.
But, you know, like, if you have suggestions, we're more than happy and open to give them a shot. I mean, I'm originally from Florida, and there's totally a lot of beers down there I'd love to put on this show. They don't sell them up here in Chicago, so they're probably not going to make it. But, yeah, so I'm kind of happy about that segment. And check out Cruz Blanca. Check out their – if you're in the city for, you know, a visit or you happen to live here as well, check out that restaurant. Patrick, where are they hanging out around?
Cruz Blanca is in the West Loop off Randolph. And he's got two of them off Clark Street. Toblo Pompo, I believe how you pronounce it, is a more fancier one. But he has another one, Frontera Grill, connected to that. That's not as fancy, not as expensive. So I think you guys should check it out if you're into that type of food or you're in the city, don't know where to go. Check it out. It's Cruz Patrick Blanca also has a great rooftop bar. And, you know, you can take a brewery tour and try different kinds of things.
Definitely worth it if you happen to be in the Chicagoland area. I think that'll do it for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where everybody has a valet. Like, every single fucking restaurant had a valet.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
That was the weirdest fucking thing. I was like, I refuse to believe that there was this many valets. For places that were not important. Like, I feel like that Taco Bell had a fucking valet.
Yeah.
Where they just drove through the drive-thru for you. But yes, so those are our opinions. If you guys have differing opinions, go ahead and, like Patrick said, let us know on Instagram or Twitter, or hit up our website, swhn19.com, where you can find this episode and all of our back catalog of other episodes. You can also find our commentaries on a handful of stuff. We got commentary on Surf Ninjas, would have just dropped. You got
Hereditary
commentary. Oh yeah, we also have a commentary on the Star Trek episode prior to Wrath of Khan, Space Seed. That one's up there. And I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff. You could see all the pictures that, you know, we make that are the posters for movies, or in the case of some of these commentaries, just goofy-looking pictures that involve us. You can also check out our Brew of the Week pictures and our Brew of the Week suggestions, such as the Cruz Blanca Palm Shade. It's a really good one. Let us know what you think of the show. If you guys got comments, you guys got movie suggestions, throw them our way. If we haven't, if at least one person in this room hasn't seen them, we might just do it. It might just become an episode.
I do have one thing to add. Shout out to Binny's in Lakeview for the good selection of local Chicago beers.
Always
appreciate that.
Yep. Check out Binny's in Lakeview, or really any Binny's if you'd like. They have a great selection of liquors and beers and wines. They are not paying us to say this. It just happens to be the place that we bought this beer from. So, you know, there you go. But check them out. They were nice. Feel free to check us out on all those different mediums. Check out our past episodes. We are available on iTunes and Spotify. And if you happen to use Google Play Music Podcast, whatever, we're on there too. We're also on a whole bunch of different things. Check out our Anchor if you want to link to any of that. That's there. I think that'll do it for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm your host, Thomas, signing off.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Patrick. And a quick hint for next week's episode, Kansas City Shuffle.
Kansas City Shuffle, guys. Again, doesn't do me a damn bit of good. you guys have a good one.